Deals, deals everywhere, but not a signature to be found. From Marketplace in Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler in for David Brancaccio. The United Auto Workers have agreed to a tentative labor agreement with General Motors, one that could end a month-long strike that has more than 30 GM factories in the U.S. stalled. Estimates say the strike cost $835 million in lost wages for workers and $1.5 billion in lost profits for General Motors. The workers' union still has to pass the deal before folks can get back to work. In other deal news, we're hearing that a Brexit agreement has been reached after years of negotiations, false starts, and a change of two prime ministers. Of course, that deal has to pass the EU and UK parliaments before Britain can leave the bloc. For more on the potential impact and market news on our side of the pond, we're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist of the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, good morning.
Good morning.
So Brexit, this feels like the closest that we've been to a deal over there. It's not ratified yet. But what does that mean, even sort of these negotiations? What does it mean for the global economy?
Well, right now, certainly markets are taking it with this sort of cautious optimism because it means something instead of nothing. And we've been caught in a nothingness, this void of sort of not knowing what was going to happen and where we're going to just careen off a cliff on October 31st. That said, we still don't even know the details of the quote-unquote deal. And much like the trade deal with China, we don't know that it will be actually come to fruition given some backlash to it in Northern Ireland.
We got retail numbers this week weaker than some had hoped for the first time in a long time, and it has some folks worried because that's part of the economy that seemed to be just chugging right along, right?
Yeah, there's an early chill in September for consumers. Retail sales actually fell instead of increasing. And retail sales are only a small portion of what consumers spend on. They spend mostly on services. And in August, that was somewhat worrisome because as the trade wars flared up, consumers pulled back on vacations and services. So we're watching this very carefully because there's an underlying fragility. The economy is slowing. We're going to see GDP next week for the U.S. economy could be 1.2-1.3% in the third quarter. That's more than a full percentage point slowdown from the first half of the year.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
We're set to get GDP numbers from the Chinese central government tomorrow, and economists expect growth to be right around 6%, maybe even lower. That would be the slowest growth in China for in almost 30 years. Chinese exports fell by more than 3% year-on-year in September, underscoring the impact of, you guessed it, the trade war with the United States and slowing global demand. Andrew Coughlin, a policy analyst at the Eurasia Group, says Chinese households are already feeling the current economic stagnation, and the government has to be ready if things get even worse.
A significant slowdown beyond what they're already facing would be a truly unique challenge for China's political leaders.
And the Chinese government has already tried to spur growth by cutting taxes and introducing stimulus packages for the manufacturing sector, but that hasn't worked. Victor Shi at the University of California, San Diego says the Chinese government's going to likely have to use monetary policy to grow the economy. But he warns,
if the Chinese government were to print more money, that could exacerbate inflation, which is also not desirable for the government.
The slowdown is affecting other countries in Asia, too. Data this week from Singapore showed it narrowly avoided entering a recession in the third quarter.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
Now to Silicon Valley, where venture capitalists, a crucial piece in startup funding, are trending away from investing in, quote, green tech. This program's host, David Brancaccio, spoke with Marketplace tech host Molly Wood to find out why.
So you Silicon Valley and adjacent Northern Californians have all this cleverness, but the other ingredient to make you a tech hub are the VCs willing to put big money at risk on the cleverness? But you found that when it comes to investing in climate change tech, not all that much money is being placed in that direction?
Yeah, you know, we really went knocking on some doors of some big name venture capital firms, and a lot of them said they're a little shy because a lot of them invested heavily in sort of a green tech revolution 10 or 15 years ago, solar and other renewable energy. And a lot of those companies went under. And so since these firms lost a lot of money once, they're just staying away.
All right. So once burned, twice shy. But I mean, venture capital, you lose some money sometimes. And the tech is now in 2019 here changing.
Oh, absolutely. And so it is a little hard to understand, especially because even some of the technologies that, you know, may not have worked as companies 10 or 15 years ago have become successful since then. And there have been some clear successes in venture capital, even recently. Beyond Meat is one example that had a huge return for investors and is considered, you know, a meat replacement technology that can help mitigate climate change.
All right. And even if you have a premise that's proved technically as a piece of technology that could help climate change, I mean, you have to think about making it in a cost-effective way so people actually adopt.
Yeah. And on the one hand, we want the tech industry to engage on climate solutions. On the other hand, there is this fear that they will come up with products that are premium, that are expensive, and that are only available to people or cities or states that can afford them. We actually talked to one venture capitalist, Seth Bannon, from a firm called 50 Years, which is specifically investing in environmental tech. They have this metric that they like to apply to whether their technology should be funded. He said that they want all of their products to pass what they call the Mr. Burns test. Mr. Burns, of course, legendarily from The Simpsons, who is a very cheap billionaire. And he said, we don't want to fund a product that Mr. Burns wouldn't buy. It should be the highest quality product at the lowest quality cost. And he said, that's the only way markets can help solve the climate crisis.
Marketplace's David Brancaccio and Molly Wood. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.